for Geek Gamer Weekly.
Center of the most calculating intelligence on Earth.
The Uber Podcast, just for geeks and gamers.
We have news for the beautiful people. There's a lot more of us in our view.
With your hosts, Joseph Falby.
Men wanted to be like him. Women wanted to be with him.
John Kessler.
He will be talked about in the same way that Rockefeller and Carnegie and Ford are talked about.
And Chase Nunes.
For your information, butthead, he's headed for the video championships in Los Angeles.
Now, live from Earth.
Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened then?
When?
Just now.
It's Geek Gamer Weekly.
This is Geek Gamer Weekly, episode number 213, recorded on Sunday, September 9th, 2012. Schwitzerian. Geek Gamer Weekly is brought to you by Geek Gamer TV's coverage of PAX Prime 2012 in Seattle, Washington. Did you miss out on all the games, fun, and excitement? Well, you can now revisit them all at geekgamer.tv/PAX Prime 2012. Hey everybody, welcome again to another edition of Geek Gamer Weekly. This is the internet broadcast for geeks and gamers. Live Sunday evening, September 9th, 2012, episode number 203 in spirit of Los Angeles, California, where area code 213 resides. That's right, every edition from now on, Mr. John Kessler, I'm going to put spotlight on an area code.
Okay.
My name is Chase Nunes. I help orchestrate this chaotic mess of stories and fun stuff. Joining us this week, we have a huge show, so big we can hardly contain him and them and all of them. First off, here he is, folks, holding down our chat room, moderating it for all to see.
Well, they can't see the whole.
No, they can't. But yeah, they can see the iTronic Weezer.
Yeah.
There he is, folks. Mr. John Kessler, our moderator.
Trying to keep
an EVE Online down. Specialist. Hey, John.
Hi.
How are you?
Just ducky.
That's great. Have you recovered from PAX last week?
Yes. I slept in really good.
Yeah.
All week.
Did you hear that Mr. Josh Coleman got the con flu?
Yes.
Yeah, he's not doing too well.
No.
He was going to be here this week, but he couldn't make it.
Yep.
All right. Also joining us this week, live as he can be from beautiful Queens, New York, the proprietor of the GFQ Network, finishing off a tasty beverage.
This was great.
Andrew Zarian.
Oh, hey, we're doing a show. Forgot
yes.
about this.
Yes, we are.
To kind of keep the streak alive, I am not going to be sober for the entirety of the show.
And is it still 95 degrees in your studio?
No, it's actually cooled down big time here in New York. We had a tornado hit yesterday.
Jesus.
And tornadoes hit Queens, New York, the second year in a row, actually.
Wow.
Really bizarre, but it's cooled down, and it's actually quite enjoyable in this room.
Nobody lost any trailer parks?
No trailer parks. You know, that'd be hysterical if we had trailer parks here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No offense to anybody who lives in a trailer, by the way.
No, I think that's just one of your guys just wishing trailer parks would be destroyed in tornadoes. I don't agree with that comment.
I am just trying to make sure that I don't offend anybody or anything on this edition of this show.
Oh, I'm telling you, you're going to offend a lot of people.
Oh, I know.
You're screwed.
I'm screwed. Joining us this week, we have a very, very special guest. I've been stalking him for years. He is the host of NSFW on the Twit Network. He's also the host of Scam School on Revision 3. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is in all glory, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Dude, I'm so disappointed I don't have like some glowing backlight behind me after that intro. That was phenomenal. Thank you so much, Chase.
Hey, no problem, Brian. Welcome to the show. I always love the fact that you do all these side angles and you throw up these different shots. I love how you do that. It's so cool.
I'm surprised that now let me kick it over to Andrew Zarian here. How, because you seem to favor, Andrew, that front view. You know, you're always about that front-facing camera. Like me, if I have two cameras, I want to show you every freaking opportunity I have. I'll flip it forth as often as I can, but you tend to stick to the one.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to battle you with switching of the cameras because I know you like doing the side shot, and I have the same side shot as you do, but I broke my something in my main streaming box, and my USB devices are all streaming at like one frame a second.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's all pixelated, so that's not going to happen today.
I was really close to introducing Brian as the former host of Game On, but I decided not to go there. It's
too soon. You're breaking hearts. It's just mentioning it.
I know. Jeez, it's too soon. But, you know, it's still a highly subscribed show on iTunes, which I find phenomenal.
Well, from what I understand, part of that is like the iTunes thing. There's a bunch of now dormant shows that are very highly rated in iTunes because part of the way the subscription model work is that it's the number of subscriptions relative to when the last episode happened. So if I understand it correctly, what I've heard is like it unfairly supports now dead podcasts. Like if you go a year since your last episode, it's like, wow, you know, 800 people have subscribed since the last episode, so it must be popular. So wow. I don't know if that counts, but in my sleep right before I go to bed, I think I just imagine that all of them are this groundswell of support for the show after it was canceled.
Yeah, I mean, it was the most ambitious thing Twitter has ever done, and still to this date I believe it's the most ambitious thing they ever done. But no, NSFW is still going strong over there, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if you haven't seen Justin and I with the NSFW chat realm, the Diamond Club, as we call them,
yes,
put together our fake erotic fiction novel that spent 3 freaking weeks as a top 10 bestseller on the iTunes bookstore. It was amazing, and it funded our entire giant party that we did at Dragon Con. It was one of the best experiences of my entire freaking life. It was amazing.
Brian, my entire family bought a copy of the book.
Did you really?
I got such a story for you, man. My wife knows obviously who you are. We've been on each other's shows a couple times.
Sure.
And her mother sent her a link to the video you and Justin did on YouTube talking about the book. The funny thing is my mother-in-law wrote a erotic novel in the 80s.
Oh, my God.
So
are you
she found it hysterical. Yeah, and I'm trying to dig it out because I want to publish the book because apparently – and she's so well put together and conservative that she wrote this erotic novel. And it's like a big joke in the family. And she sent my wife the link of you and Justin on YouTube talking about it. She goes, oh, my God, this is so funny. I actually bought a copy of it, and it's hysterical. And you know, the comments alone on YouTube, like there are people that don't know that this is a joke. Well, so my wife – go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say like that has been the most surprising, exciting aspect of this entire experiment was the fact that we thought we were pulling one over on the internet. What we didn't expect are some people who just got swept up in it and actually – like we found a true fan of this terrible book that we wrote. Like she's like a 17-year-old girl who I think we were talking about it on Twitter. And the folks who run the Twitter of Patricia Harkins Bradley, our fake author, she tweeted, oh, they're talking about me on Twitter. And then out of nowhere comes this tweet saying, that's wonderful. Congratulations. I love your book. And then there's a follow-up tweet saying, like, will we get more adventures from Brianna Young? And then, with a winky face, she's like, well, I'm sure there's a lot more left in the story. And then we go back and we look and we're like, holy crap, this is a real life 17-year-old girl who genuinely loves this crappy novel that we wrote. This is amazing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, people have come up to me. I mean, after that, I've gotten a link all over. I mean, it really went viral on Reddit, and a lot of my friends got it and they saw it and they sent it to me. And they're like, oh, this, you know, this guy that does a podcast. And I'm like, I know Brian. He's been on my show. I know him. So this whole thing happened.
It's Brushwood.
My entire family buys the book now on iTunes, and everybody – and now it becomes, oh, you know, Andrew's friend did this. Oh, Andrew knows the guy. It's like I became – like I got points in my family for knowing you.
That's amazing.
So I'm like, okay, you know what? That's great. And I was a big supporter of this thing, and I tweeted everything out. I came home late one night. I was out with a couple of my buddies. I came home, and on my wife's computer next to the bed – was Revision 3. I'm like, what is Jess watching on Rev 3? She was watching Scam School.
Oh, that's awesome.
I guess it was maybe the beer, but I got really jealous. I'm like, I go out for 1 minute. Brian gets all this fame on Reddit, and he's sleeping with my wife. He was really uncomfortable. I'm going into bed, and here's Brian doing a magic trick with Alex Gumpel from Twit.
The Flowmaster.
And it was just so surreal that it comes full circle, because my wife is so cut off from like the whole like viral video stuff on the internet. So to have her get involved and like start looking up Brian Brushwood and start looking up Rev 3, it's amazing how that one thing, you know, spun into this whole thing.
This is amazing. You just made my lifetime. Thank you so much, Andrew. This is the best story ever.
Unfortunately, yeah. I've gotten negative points because I try to tell my wife about Brian and she's like, who? So yeah. I try.
Do I have the brick at the Twit House that says Schwood stabbed Andrew Zarian?
Yes.
I want to get one that said Schwood slept with Andrew Zarian's wife at this point, because that's how I feel.
In case you guys didn't realize, these guys have a previous history. A little bit of a bro love, if you want to call it that.
I love Brian. Yes, I love him.
Of course.
My favorite.
We all love Brian.
Absolutely. I don't think you love him more than me, Chase.
No,
somebody
no.
Insult me really fast. Somebody mock me before I start to get a big head here.
John?
I don't know.
Okay.
There you go.
Or better yet, why don't we talk about the news?
Let's
get
to
the news.
Big geek story. Big, huge geek story. And that is G4, the network that destroyed and assimilated our beloved tech TV, is going to be undergoing a geek rebranding. Oh, I'm sorry. Just a rebranding. I shouldn't say geek rebranding, but they're going to be
geek rebranding.
They're going to rebrand themselves. They're going to reboot. They're going to be a more sophisticated channel, as if, you know, right now watching Cops, you know, every other half hour, and then Attack from the Show, and then more Cops. I don't know what's on that channel anymore.
I believe they were quoted saying, "We're going from geek to chic."
Jeez.
So they're going to become like the GQ. Of television.
That's a facepalm, a Picard facepalm, if I ever did see one. But do you think, you know, Brian, that there might be a chance here for G4 to kind of maybe relive some of their heyday as an actually good? I mean, I remember some good gaming shows on G4, like, you know, Icons was a really good show, and there were some really good content on the former G4, and then they turned into this edgy guy cops thing, and they're in a bit of an identity crisis.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm a little bit less qualified to talk about this now than I was 7 years ago, and I'd be interested to kick it over to your chat room to see what they say. But like, I just have a hard time watching TV. If I'm killing dead time, you know, 10 years ago, if I was killing dead time, I would just have, you know, we'll say Cartoon Network's Adult Swim on, or I'd have, you know, maybe G4 or Tech TV back in the day. But nowadays, new media is good enough where it's like, if you just want supplementary noise, there's really great programming available for you at all times through the web. And I just don't watch TV. Now all my television watching is appointment viewing. And I can't think of anything on G4 that's appointment viewing for me.
No, I agree with that. I mean, look at all of us. You know, we're all doing internet-based content now. Because, you know, either we were disappointed and we didn't like what was on the tube, or, you know, maybe we were so small budget we couldn't afford to even get on the tube. You know, you have to have, you know, minimum budgets and stuff. I mean, Andrew, Mr. Internet Broadcast King of the East and of the world soon, I know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, is there anything G4 could do to revitalize itself, or is it too late for them?
No, I really think there is something they could do. I feel the failure of G4, which actually lasted 10 years. So did it really fail? Yeah, I guess because it hemorrhaged money. But the reason why it failed, in my opinion, is because they kind of turned their back on that hardcore audience that Tech TV had.
Yeah.
So when they flipped to G4, it was a total, 180 as far as what their content was. They tried to become younger and they tried to become edgier, but it really didn't work for them. As well as they hope. But now, you know, I don't know what they're going to put on as far as content goes. You know, the thing that was really keeping them alive was Attack of the Show, which was the Screensavers. And that was probably the most popular show on Tech TV. So they're going back many years as far as what their main show was. They'll probably keep a gaming show. They'll probably do, you know, some sort of gadget culture type show. But as far as, you know, hardcore tech, we will never see that on television ever again.
And keep in mind also, like, part of the appeal to G4 was the fact that it appealed to a very small niche that was very passionate. And we've already seen this before with what was Spike called before it was the Nashville Network.
It was
the Nashville Network, which was appealing to another very small, very passionate community of country music enthusiasts. And then it became the National Network.
I remember that.
Of Star Trek The Next Generation, and eventually it became Spike. And Spike, you know, love it or hate it, there's some decent programming on that network, and there's some neat ideas that they're trying. So it's like, I don't want to write off the network just for trying to rebrand itself. I mean, if think about it this way. Let's say you are G4 and you have an idea you want to appeal to geeks. The problem is that geeks have all moved to the internet for the way we want to absorb our programming. So it's if the geeks leave you for the internet, then what's left besides rebranding yourself and going in a new direction?
Well, what's to pull anybody back to G4? I mean, you got Kevin Pereira left Attack of the Show. Mm-hmm. You have Adam Sessler left Extended Play or X Play, which, by the way, he was like the longest tenured employee of all that. You know, he came from the original, what was it? Was it CNET TV? What was it? Pre-Tech TV? ZDTV? Yeah, ZDTV. Yeah. So, I mean, what's to bring anybody back? I mean, they want to this was a direct quote from them saying, you know, they want to move it into more of a modern male. The guy-centric is more sophisticated. They want to still have tech and video game stuff. But, I mean, with all the advent of, you know, the internet now and video games and, you know, you got Twitch and you got game streaming, you have very niche stuff on the internet now. I don't know if they're going to be able to get those gamers.
Now, what's interesting to me is seeing the G4 rebranding trying to appeal to a wider audience, while on the flip side, sci-fi is now going back to its roots and acknowledging, yes, like, we shouldn't have tried to appeal to the masses. What we should have done is appeal to our base with science fiction programming. So they're coming
except for WWE SmackDown that's still on sci-fi. I don't know how that fits in.
That's fiction.
Well, but, you know, I'll give you one example. You know, Revision 3 did a deal with a smaller cable channel. I forgot the channel that they were on.
YouTube. It's YouTOO, YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube.
In fact, I hosted the intros to the Dignation episodes that they would do. I would drive up to Dallas and I would record like 6 episodes at a time doing the stand-ups. YouTube was founded on this idea that they had this technology that would allow you to use you would download the app, and let's say you're watching Batman or the X-Files or whatever, and then somebody would pop up and say, hey man, what's the scaredest you've ever been of a Sasquatch? Use the app and send in a clip. And they would send it in, and there would be a bank of people running editing machines that would take the clip, they would check it for copyright, check it for content, and then drop it in. And then the idea continues to be that you sitting on the couch could suddenly find yourself on nationwide television instantly using this technology and this app. And so they partnered with Revision 3, and they did the Revision 3 Variety Hour. They did Dignation. And so weirdly, even after Dignation ended, I was recording these stand-ups. And so there was a very, very brief moment when I was the only employed host of Dignation.
Wow. But I mean, I could see content and more niche channels using internet content, kind of syndicating internet content, and it's really not costing them much. All they've got to do is pay the bills to have that station up. I could see them doing things like that.
Well, isn't the reason that's why Discovery, you know, went and purchased Revision 3? You know, I mean, maybe they see the future of internet-based niche content.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Listen, I'm one of these people. I haven't turned the TV in my living room on in maybe 3 months.
I don't
have the only thing that I watch is probably Netflix when we want to watch some sort of series, or I watch Discovery Science, and I watch, you know, the Morgan Freeman In and Through the Wormhole, and I fall asleep to it. I mean, that's the only thing I really watch now. So everything I'm consuming is online.
What about about Big Brother?
Yeah, Big Brother I watch because we do a recap show of that.
Okay. No, I don't even have I don't have pay TV anymore. I have an antenna sitting on my house. I get my local news and content that way, and then everything else I get through Netflix, Amazon Prime, and there's this what's that service called again, John? That you put on my PS3.
Watching Crunchyroll.
Crunchyroll for anime, which is phenomenal. I love it. It's great.
I'll tell you what, and I mean, that's if I could, if I didn't have kids who wanted to see the latest episodes of like Disney HD programming or whatever, like I would do that in a heartbeat. But like weirdly, you know, because my wife can handle the change, I can handle the change. HBO is a bit of a stumbling block because we'd have to get creative on how we saw Game of Thrones. But if it weren't for the kids, man, I would be erasing all that instantly.
Yeah. Well, I know we all have our feelings about, you know, G4 and what's going to happen with it. We'll see. They're going to be rebranding early part of next year. We don't even know if it's still going to be called G4. I mean, hell, they may even just change the whole name of the network. We really don't know too much at this point.
GQ.
Well, I heard rumors that Chris Perillo's coming back and hosting everything.
Oh.
Wait, is that a real rumor?
No, I'm making that up.
Oh.
Sorry, Chris.
You know, Chris is from my local area out here.
Chris is a nice dude. We drank a lot at Blog World last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I tried to get him to talk bad. I tried to get him to, like, badmouth Leo, and he wouldn't. I tried to get him to say something on camera, and he's like, I know what you're trying to do. I'm like, I'm not trying to do anything.
Let's move gears. Talking instead of about opinions of a network, let's talk about opinions of a gadget. So last week, Amazon had their huge conference, and they unveiled their new Amazon 8.9-inch Kindle Fire HD, which stands for high definition, John. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's got a 1920 by 1200 display, and at the same time, my Flash just crashed. Congratulations, Flash. You know, they also trotted out their old models, but this is their new one. Obviously, I thought last year was the year of the tablet, but do you guys think this would be a good idea to pick one of these up or put a pre-order in, especially when we have a great idea of Apple trotting out probably a smaller version of their iPad? I'll let our esteemed guest, Brian, chat about it first.
Yeah, man, I actually I didn't follow the announcement. It's very hard for me because I've already bought an iPad. So in my mind, that category, that experience is already defined by that object. I think that there's a battle for the lower end tablet. And I think that Amazon is really bringing their A game. They're doing a fantastic job of bringing a non-confusing low end curated experience for people, for the grandmother set, you know, the folks who wouldn't normally think about buying a tablet, but when it's only $150, they feel like jumping on it. I think it's great that it's there. I think that Google has more to lose from the existence of this product than Apple does. And I'm really, really curious to see where this heads.
Andrew?
I have a Kindle Fire, and I have the Nexus 7. And I have to tell you, from the original Kindle Fire to the Nexus 7, it's night and day. The Nexus 7 is so much better than the Kindle Fire. But right now, and many other people are like this, we've already purchased either a Kindle Fire or a Nexus 7 or an iPad. So I guess at $159, you could kind of justify buying it. But I think it's pretty confusing what they did with the three separate models for the Kindle Fire. Because there's two 7-inch models. There's the HD and the regular. And I found that a little confusing.
You have to forgive me for laughing here. I'm keeping an eye in the chat room. And it was user 2983 said, you know, Apple will probably sue Amazon because Apple invented color.
I'm so bummed at how that whole fight is down. I can't imagine that consumers are going to benefit from that decision.
I mean, the problem that I have with some of these tablets, especially some of the ones that are coming in the smaller form factors, I mean, the Nexus 7 is a phenomenal one. I mean, John's actually using it right now to watch.
Streaming the show.
You're streaming the show. You're using it as a monitor. Granted, yep. It is a few seconds behind. But it's a great tablet. For the price point, it's phenomenal. But for those who are heavily invested in the iOS ecosystem, I mean, why would you go and get an Amazon tablet? Why you would just wait for a smaller iPad if you wanted that? Or
I'll tell you something, Chase. And when I purchased the Nexus 7, I had the Kindle Fire for a couple months, and I never used the Kindle Fire. I bought it, I played with it, and it just sat there for months, and nobody ever used it. I was strictly using my iPad as far as a consumption device. When I was in my bedroom and I was, you know, watching, you know, if I was on Reddit or I was watching some YouTube clips, I mean, that's pretty much what the iPad was for me. since getting the Nexus 7, I haven't used my iPad.
It's
been a couple months. I haven't. My wife is using the iPad exclusively. I feel that the Nexus 7 is able to fulfill whatever void.
Is that because of the form factor, though? Is that just because it fits better in your hand? Is that the reason?
I wasn't a fan of the 7-inch display, but it's kind of grown on me. But I feel that it does everything that the iPad was doing for me.
I'll tell you what.
I mean, the only issue that I have is that certain applications, like I'm a big tower defense fan. I'll play any kind of tower defense game. And nearly every game that I play longer than 25 minutes will crash on me.
Mm.
And that's a flaw of Android, obviously, and development for it. But as far as, you know, going on YouTube and using like Flipboard or Facebook, it does a great job at it. And it I really don't miss the iPad.
Yeah. Brian?
That, do you ever stick the Nexus 7 like in your back pocket? Because that's what blew me away is the fact that you could get a very real tablet experience in a device that can be put on your body, because that's of course the biggest problem with the iPad is that it's too big to you waste one hand the entire duration you have it on you, either holding it or carrying it or using it.
Kessler, yeah, jump in there.
Yeah, I did that at PAX. I was like going, I had it in my hand. I was like, well, I was like, oh crap, it does fit in the back pocket. So that's
just don't sit on it.
Yeah, just don't sit on it. But you know, what's not that we did much sitting at PAX. But
or are they using Gorilla Glass on that thing? I think they are.
Something I
you haven't scratched it. You don't have any protective layer on it.
I don't have any protective any layer on it.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't scratched it.
You don't even use a case.
No.
Yeah.
It's in the backpack. It's up against the Nook. It's in its case.
Yeah, you have a you went from the Nook to that after I kind of pushed you in that direction.
Yeah, I let them spoon in my backpack.
What do you say to that?
Next.
Hey, did you guys also hear that Bing will be the default search engine on the Kindle Fire HD? Does this matter? This is how Microsoft is going to take over the search engine world by getting on tablets, I guess. I mean, granted, though, they're going to have their Microsoft Surface tablets that will probably have Google by default. I'm kidding. They will not be Google by default. Does this make a difference, really? I mean, who really searches much anymore on tablets, especially now with this tablet? You can do the voice thing. You know, I don't know. Does Bing even matter on this, gents?
I would say yes. Number one, it's good that there exists another alternative in the search engine market.
Yes.
Weirdly, the what Bing needs to do is make themselves indistinguishable from Google. Like they.
Oh, we just lost Brian. Brian just fell off the cliff.
It's the Microsoft stuff. It just crashed.
Yeah, well,
it's no problem.
It is Skype.
Skype said,
and it was Microsoft, and they said, no, screw you. We'll get them back.
No.
Do you think this matters at all, Andrew, about, you know, Bing on a tablet? I mean, obviously, Bing's trying to make their stronghold, and they're moving in the tablet space.
I do feel that it's going to help. I know that Microsoft is partnering with the Nook. For that, whatever line the Barnes & Noble is going to put out, I know they're going to have some sort of relationship. Being on the Kindle Fire obviously helps with them, but the future of search is going to be probably integration.
Yeah.
I'll give you one example. You know, search on the Kindle Fire, the Nexus 7. I generally use the voice search on this thing, and I'll ask it a question, and it'll pull up the search. So I'm not actually going to Google.com and searching.
Right.
So I'm curious to see where search takes us the next, you know, maybe next 24 months, because it's going to be interesting seeing the transition from going to the website, typing it in, to, I guess, just speaking to it.
See, I forced myself to use Bing for, I think, a week. I actually changed my homepage. I put myself through the paces to try to get myself to just see if I liked it. And honestly, I didn't like the search results that I was getting with Bing. I mean, the homepage is beautiful. It looked great. But the results that I was getting was not as good as I was getting from Google.
If you were listening to my tirade that I went on that nobody heard because apparently I got disconnected by the cable. what I was saying is like what Bing needs to play for it right now is to normalize search results. They need to convey the idea that there's a baseline quality on search results, and that Bing's search is the same as Google's, and it's all just search. It's just do you feel like paying a premium for having Google be the search results that you go for. So weirdly, guys, like Bing needs to make search boring, essentially.
Did you guys see that website where you could compare the two, Bing and Google, and it kind of, you know, it's like a blind taste test. You can't see, you don't know which search is which.
No.
No, this is great.
Yeah, and you vote and you say, you know, I like the one on the left, the one on the right, or
What's the website?
I forgot what it was. Paul Thurrott told me about it.
Name dropper.
I'm name dropping now.
Actually, it looks like Bing versus Google.com. So here, I'm going to do a search for Brian Brushwood.
We'll see it.
That it wasn't that actually.
Let's do a voice search on the.
This one, it looks like it does them side by side. Yeah. Unfortunately, it looks like
here we go. It's called the Bring It On Challenge. I'll tell you the website right now. It is bringiton.com.
All right. All right. We're all typing it in now. We're going to bring it down here.
So I got Bring It On the Musical.
Type in Brian Brushwood.
I'm actually in IRC. They were saying Bing It On.
Oh, Bing It On.
Bing It On.
Is this a Microsoft site?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
But fair to them, they actually allowed Google to win, because when I did it, you do about five rounds and Google won for me.
All right, so we'll do this here for we got to pick something that we know is not Google or Microsoft centric.
Well, do Brian Brushwood.
All right, we'll do that then. Brian Brushwood,
and then do me after,
and we'll do search loading round one.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, so on the left. Is it showing the first result as schwood.squarespace.com?
Yeah.
On the right, it's his Wikipedia page. Then,
interesting.
So now the one on the left, it brings the images up sooner. The one on the right, his Twitter up is.
The one on the left, it looks like, has a teller screaming randomly.
It does.
Which is an interesting related result.
So which result do you guys think is better, left or right?
I can't tell the difference. This is the entire purpose of it. It's like, this is exactly what I was hoping they would do. They've essentially said, hey, what's the difference?
Well, so I know which one is Google.
See, I kind of know which one is Google too.
Yeah, because of the Google Plus search.
The one on the right?
Yeah. The one on the left comes up with Google Plus.
And actually, I like the one on the left personally, just because of the fact that if I'm doing a search, say, for Brian or Andrew, and if you guys have your own personal web pages, I want that to be the top result.
Sure.
I mean, that makes sense to me. So I'm going to go ahead and click on the left here, and then it wants me to do another search, which
right,
I won't
next
do.
Search, Andrew Zarian, right?
All right, fine. We'll do Andrew Zarian. So AndrewZarian. All right, here we go.
That's it.
Ooh, all right. So they both have the homepage of AndrewZarian.com as the top result. However,
only one of them you can see Andrew's crotch.
That's true.
Oh, look, I'm practically new to that one. There you go. That's the one. See, I'm literally, for people listening, I'm standing in my underwear.
and then you're like posing and you're stepping out magazine. On the right there, too. And then you have some old picture with GoDaddy and some old frames and stuff. Look at you, man.
GoDaddy?
Yeah, like some sort of GoDaddy lower third there.
Oh, yeah. They used to be an advertiser.
No, the problem I think Bing has is just name recognition, right? I mean, Google, everybody's in Google. They love Google. Bing is Microsoft, and they don't want to be associated with it. I don't know. But this seems interesting. Bing It On. Try it out, you guys. BingItOn.com. How fun is that? Let's move on to our next story, shall we? Rumors. More rumors about the iPhone, the new iPhone 5. Is it going to be called the 5? Is it going to be called the new iPhone? We don't really know. Maybe we don't even care. But they're saying that the new iPhone will support LTE from around the world, which will include US, Europe, and Asia. They're saying, though, it's unlikely to be available on every carrier. But it will have LTE. Now, this isn't really a big shocker to us. We kind of assumed that it would have LTE. What we don't know at this point, if at least here in the States, is going to be on Verizon. Is it going to be on Sprint? Is it going to be on AT&T all at launch? Now, we probably will assume that it will be on AT&T and Verizon. But do you guys think Sprint will even have a chance at launch, or are we going to see a delay of a month or two, and then we're going to see it come out on
Sprint? No, I think we'll see Sprint at launch, because we saw on the last release. The 4S was on Sprint at launch, right?
Right, it was.
Yeah, I can't imagine them pulling back from that, especially once they have the infrastructure to make that possible. I'll tell you what, though, man. I was on the fence about whether or not I wanted to get another iPhone, because at this point, I've bought every iPhone the day it's come out since the very first one. And I was wondering, like, well, maybe this year I'll actually sit it out, because in general, you know, I'm pretty happy with my 4S. And then I remembered LTE, and because I've experienced LTE on my iPad, I'm like, well, there's no discussion. It's got to be – I'm definitely going to buy it if it's LTE.
Are you a grandfathered unlimited user, though?
I am, and that's the problem, is I'm not grandfathered unlimited on my iPad, and so as a result, I feel the sting of paying attention to my bandwidth. And if I could get LTE in that grandfathered experience, then that's totally worth whatever the new phone costs.
So do you guys even know? I know they haven't announced it yet for the iPhone, but let's say you have an iPhone currently and you with unlimited data, and you want to get, say, a Galaxy, you know, Nexus or Galaxy Nexus, we'll throw that out there, or we're S3 or something like that. Can you, and you have unlimited data, can you move your unlimited data to 4G LTE, or does AT&T chop that? Does anybody know?
From what I remember,
assumed that you don't.
They were called iPhone packages. The people that are grandfathered in, they're under some, it's not like 3G or 4G, whatever, it's like an iPhone package. So you're grandfathered in as long as you have an iPhone.
I see. All right. Now, do you think AT&T will say, for all of you who have 4 and 4Ss on unlimited data and you want to come over to LTE, you're going to lose your unlimited data? Is this AT&T's opportunity to get people off of it, because we
Stop
all know.
Stop talking that way. I don't even want to hear that talk from you. Oh.
We don't want it to happen. I know I don't, but it's probably going to be that way, right? I mean, AT&T's evil.
A bunch of toddler. God damn it. It's
all right.
That's probably what's going to happen, and I don't like it.
I know. We'll have a consoling after the show for you, Brian. But then again, right now, what, T-Mobile just launched their unlimited 4G data. They've already started I saw an article. I didn't put this in the rundown, but their new SIM cards are going to have SIM cards available that would fit the new iPhone 5, the mini SIM card. Is it the mini SIM or the micro SIM? I don't know what they're calling it. But it's a smaller SIM card even more that will fit into the new iPhone. They're offering 4G LTE data unlimited right now. They're saying it's truly unlimited. Obviously, Sprint is still pushing unlimited, so right now it only leaves Verizon. And you know, AT&T is trying to curate that, so we'll see. Brian, you said you're still wishy-washy about the iPhone, the new iPhone. You're not sure if you're gonna get it.
I'm in.
Oh, you are in.
If it's got LTE, then that's the end of it. And to be honest, yes, I mean, I'm 100% in.
And the new dock connector doesn't matter to you.
Doesn't bother me in the least. It's like, to be honest, it's like they could have come out with a different annoying dock connector every single iteration previous to now, and I still would have bought it. Like, I understand that bizarre obsession with buying the latest Apple crap that everyone else seems to have.
Sure. Andrew?
I'm not too sure if I'm going to buy it or not.
Okay.
But what I am surprised about is that T-Mobile still doesn't have the iPhone. I'm a little surprised.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
I thought they, like, I mean, if you have an unlocked iPhone, you could do it, right? But then you just have Edge.
You're stuck with Edge. I don't know if that's still true or not.
Well, one thing I was reading about is they will be supporting the faster speeds with the new phone. So, like, you pop in one of those T-Mobile SIMs. I think they already do it now, I think. They're starting to change frequencies to support faster speeds on your unlocked iPhone 4 or 4S or something like that. So it's not just Edge anymore. I know, yeah, I've had some friends that, you know, did the old jailbreak unlock. And now you can actually, you know, legitimately unlock if you're out of contract and own your phone outright. John Kessler, you're on an older phone. I mean, in like dog years, your phone is like 10 years old now.
Yes.
John has an Evo 4G. Is it an Evo? Isn't it an Evo?
Yeah.
Okay, Evo on Sprint.
Yes.
Are you thinking about updating anytime soon?
Nope.
No. You love Sprint.
you know, I don't have any issues with it at the moment.
Okay, but eventually, you know, they're going to kill that for their clear network. It's going to be LTE.
I mean, eventually I will have to upgrade, but you know, I'm happy with the fact that I've got unlimited everything. So,
and how much data do you really use every month on your phone?
I don't even pay attention.
Yeah,
it's unlimited.
That's true.
You know, it's like why. You know,
but unlimited is not really unlimited, right?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
Yes. And I don't use enough.
Sprint is truly unlimited. T-Mobile says they're truly unlimited on 4G LTE now.
All I know is
AT&T are bastards, by the way, because they... See, I have a bitter spot with AT&T because I have unlimited data. And let me tell the story real quick. So I have unlimited data on my iPhone 4, and then, you know, I got a 4S. And I get a text message from AT&T saying, you're about to go over 3 gigs. So if you go over 3 gigs again next month, your data will be throttled. Okay. Then I get a message saying that, you know, we have, you know, supported tethering plans available for you. And we see that you're not on an authorized tethering plan. So they're basically accusing me of tethering, and I'm not tethering at all. And then they send me a letter in the mail. A physical letter, paper, print and everything saying, stop tethering. If you don't call us, we will switch you to a tethering plan. And then they send me an email. So I actually had to call them and convince them and tell them I am not tethering, which I'm not. Just because I'm starting to use more and more data on my phone.
I'll give the flip side of that, man. They got some kind of voodoo where it's like thrice foldishly they were able to bust me on tethering. And it's like each time was a case where there was some deadline centric thing and I couldn't get internet and the hotel Wi-Fi sucked. So I would enable the tethering thing on my jailbroken phone. And like within minutes I got a text saying like, you're tethering, aren't you? You know, you need
wow.
It was unreal, dude.
Viewer 9563 in our chat room wants to know, you know, how are we using so much data? Well, I mean, it's all this, you know, new internet media that we're watching. We're watching Netflix. I'm watching MLB.
Are you really watching Netflix on your phone?
I had never done that until I started watching Sons of Anarchy on Netflix, and for the first time I got that commercial experience where I started watching an episode on my studio PC while I was playing Star Wars The Old Republic. Then I went to the airport and I was watching on my phone, and then I got to the hotel and I resumed watching on the iPad. It was really pretty rad.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing something because I've never had the urge to, you know, like if I'm going into the city, most of the time I'm just listening to a podcast. I'll never watch content on my phone because my battery life is so awful. I know it'll be done by the time I get to the place. Yes.
I've watched stuff on – well, not so much watched it while I was driving, but I've listened to stuff on
Netflix.
You're
watching while you're driving.
Yeah, on Netflix, on my phone, while I'm driving, and got home, you know, shut the phone off.
And continue on the
Xbox.
Well, like, I'm a big baseball fan, and, you know, I'm watching and listening – watching when I can. And if I'm in the car, I'm streaming MLB.TV. I'm streaming baseball games. I'm also doing Pandora, doing a little bit of Spotify, you know, a little bit of TuneIn, another good audio app. And so I'm doing a lot of streaming content. And I've actually gone onto my account and looked at my history, and I've noticed the bar graphs going up. I mean, obviously, you know, having unlimited, you don't have to worry about throttling yourself back. And, you know, now, you know, AT&T and Verizon have these quote-unquote shared plans, which are really just bogus bullshit.
Right.
And, you know, where they're actually charging you more money. I mean, all I have is two phones. I have a phone for me and a phone for my wife. And if I switched to one of their shared plans with two phones, I would pay, on average, $30 to $40 a month.
You know where you make out on that deal? When you get, like, a tablet, you add a tablet in because it's, like, 10 bucks rather than spending, you know, $50 a month for the tablet to have 4G.
Just let me tether and make a mobile hotspot, and then I just use Wi-Fi. I don't need a tablet that uses, you know, 4G or LTE, and it just kills the battery quicker. I don't know. But don't get me wrong. Like at PAX, we had Josh Coleman's iPad, which has Verizon LTE. Phenomenal. It did an incredible job, but we were just like so worried about going over his data limit just because, you know, it eats data for breakfast. It's bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a weird situation because I'm really, you know, connected to technology, but I really don't travel much because I work for myself and I work from home. Yeah. So I'm always on Wi-Fi, and the times that I do use 4G, I've been very surprised that the battery life is awful. I'll give you one example. And it also depends on the phone. I had to pick up my wife from the airport, which is 9 miles away from my house, LaGuardia Airport.
Right.
And I was streaming. I was listening to something on Stitcher. I had a full charge. By the time I got to the airport and she got in the car, which, I mean, let's say 45 minutes later, my battery life was down to 25%.
Wow.
And that's audio. I cannot imagine what it would be like with video.
Well, the good news is as these phones get bigger, you know, and everybody's carrying basically a tablet to their ear, you know, they can fit more of a battery in. I mean, like, yeah, you know, the Nexus 7, I mean, you look at like the Nintendo DS XL, or I'm sorry, the 3DS XL, that's got great battery life. It's a bigger screen, but they can stick more battery in there. So I think that's what we're going to see, Andrew, is we're going to see bigger batteries in these devices because the screens are getting bigger. People want a little bit bigger screen.
Well, I'll give you one example. Motorola's announcement last week, you know, I mocked it and I said, I'm not a big fan of Motorola and the products they're putting out. It's not that big of a deal. They're still using an older version of Android on these things months after Jelly Bean has been released. But the fascinating thing on these devices is that they have one of the largest batteries in the market. One of the phones has a 2,300 milliamp battery, which I have not seen anybody put a battery in their phone that big.
Well, gee, you know, maybe if we had a removable battery, if we'd swap out batteries. Gee, wouldn't that be a great thought? I mean, that'd be revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last story, and this is not really fully geeky, and then we'll move on to our gaming stories. But I put this in here in honor of our special guest, Brian, this week.
Totally read this whole thing. And that place is right down the road from where I'm at. So I'm excited about this
story.
See,
I was going to ask you if you've already hit the road already.
Oh, no, I've driven on this road. I've driven on this road and several other roads. All right, you go ahead and set it up.
All right. So Jalopnik has a great article talking about the fastest highway in all of the United States
currently.
And that is a freeway, State Highway 130, leaving you know, just east of Austin, Texas. Top speed 85 miles per hour. Now the thing is, this is a toll road,
mm-hmm.
so you have to pay for the privilege of doing this. You know, there's a lot of controversy, and there's a lot of groups going, "Oh my God, we're going to kill all the kids, we're going to kill the children." Granted, they haven't probably heard of the Autobahn, and you know, that sort of thing. But I'm going to let Brian talk because you live just outside of Austin, right?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, I used to use this exact road to get down to the airport when I-35 was too busy. And you should know about Austin, this particular road, there is nothing along this stretch of road from top to bottom. And maybe that'll change, you know, down the road, so to speak, when there's, you know, Best Buys all up and down this thing. But as it stands right now, it's very rare. It's not very populated. There's nothing to get to along the way. It's essentially one giant bypass for all of Austin because Interstate 35 has a terrible, terrible choke in the middle where it goes down to only two lanes and everything really slows down. Previous to this, I have driven on a number of roads out in West Texas where the speed limit is 80 miles an hour. And it doesn't feel weird. To be honest, you just go the same speed that you would naturally go, only you're not breaking the law. And in fact, if I remember correctly, this is probably totally apocryphal, probably not true. But I remember hearing that Texas had in the either law or built into the Constitution or something like that, something that said basically speed limits have to be whatever the majority of drivers are doing anyway. And that's what was quoted when they raised the speed limit to 70 miles an hour after they deregulated the federal speed limits. So it's like it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they monitored and they're like, oh, yeah, no, most of the people are doing 85. So we might as well make that legal. So
now let me ask you, Brian, when it's 85, but are people driving like 95? Because here in New York, it's 55, but everybody's driving like 65, 70, 75.
No, that's the weird part. Like once you get up to 80 or 85, like because I'm normally a 5 miles over the speed limit kind of guy all the time, no matter where I am. But once you get up to 80 or 85 miles an hour, you're like, you know what? I'm good. This is how fast I want to go. I feel safe. Yeah. This is just fine.
Now, out of curiosity, you said you have driven down the road. Now, it was a toll road at that time, or is that part new?
Yeah, no, it was built as a toll road. It was built as a bypass around Austin. The 130 corridor, you know, runs parallel to 35 for all that, but it was meant to basically work around the fact that I-35 as it goes through downtown was not built to handle the amount of traffic that it's got. But, you know, weirdly, like, I'm okay with toll roads in general now, like almost to the point where I just want all roads to be turned into toll roads, because at least someone has a financial incentive to take care of them. Always. they're always pleasant. They're always nice and well-maintained.
That's one thing.
Trash or anything.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing. You know, when I lived in Florida, I drove a few toll roads outside of Tampa. They had a few.
Sure.
And the roads were always well maintained. Actually, I mean, they were tip top. I mean, great pavement, great blacktop. And that's the thing, right? If you have a high speed limit like this, you need that road needs to be smooth. That needs to be perfect.
Sure.
You can't have potholes on an 85. You can't have the ruts in the freeway or anything like that. So
now, one of the I saw this article earlier in the week on a different news site, and the people posting comments just kind of got off on a tangent, and I don't, you know, they must, you know, obviously they're from Washington here, but they're going off about, well, how, you know, you don't want to be going that fast around all the trucks and stuff. I'm thinking it's a toll road, people. I mean, how many trucks and semis are actually using that road?
Oh, no. They're a fair amount. Okay. Because if you're paying out of pocket, right, if you're moving, you know, freaking 20 tons of something, you know, from point A to point B, you don't want to slow down in the middle. And to be honest, Austin doesn't want you to bring your hazmat, you know, materials right through the center of town. True. They want you to take it off the side. And for $5, it's well worth it to take that.
Yeah. And most trucks have governors on them anyway, where they can't even go faster than, what, 65 or 70. I mean, some trucks.
Maybe some old trucks.
No. It depends. It depends on the carrier. I mean, my dad is a truck driver. And, you know, he did drive for some companies where they had governors on the trucks. I think they were restricted like 72. Hmm. Now, granted, I don't know if you'd want to drive a big rig going 85, but hey. So Brian, you're going to go rent a Corvette and take it out there?
I'll be rocking my Chrysler Pacifica up at 85. Now, I'll tell you, though, it's amazing, though. The rest of 35, really, at weird spots, it'll just jump up to 75 miles an hour on that interstate there. So it's like, if it's, for example, just north of Austin, it's 75 on the interstate. And looking at 130, the fact that it's totally empty, there's nothing there, it's all straight shot, it's like, why not bump it up another 10 miles an hour? I think this is a good experiment.
And I think
it would be fascinating to see how travel time changes, if accident rates go up. I'm really curious to see how that affects this.
From what I understand, and again, this is knowledge as filtered through an idiot who eats fire for a living. From what I understand, the accident rate doesn't go up, but the likelihood of a fatality goes up with speed. Yeah. However, you've got to kind of offset that on all of the benefits that getting more throughput has on this kind of road.
Yeah. And actually, you know, remember Montana? Montana didn't have a speed limit for...
No, it was
safe and prudent during the day only, daytime hours only.
Yeah.
And then because of federal law, the U.S. government was threatening to take away funding for their freeways. These were public roads, not a toll road. They had to impose a speed limit. Now, this is a toll road. So, you know, they're being funded by the users.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different here. And
I don't know. You guys are talking about 75, 85 miles an hour. We're used to going to go 3 miles. Literally, it'll take us 45 minutes here in New York City.
Yeah, come west of the Mississippi.
Come out to Texas. We got space.
I'm dying to come out to Austin, man. I've heard it's such good things.
Hey,
things
why,
about
don't you,
Austin.
Why don't you come in right now? Come on out to South by Southwest this year. You'll have a great time. We got a room for you.
You know what? I think I will this year.
All right.
I think I will.
Well, come stay with us.
I now call it two for two for setting things up.
Two for two.
Up.
You guys all heard that. I can stay with Brian.
That's right.
Make sure to send a finder's fee to Chase.
Yeah, please do.
And Brian, let me tell you, I'm a very clean person. I will clean your house top to bottom.
Okay, good. I guess that wasn't what I was asking, but that's all right.
That's why Andrew only has one camera angle, because what you don't see is everywhere else is just chaotic.
It's all of the jars of his urine.
Just just stockpiling it for the end of the world.
For all those who are checking us out for the first time, probably, this is Geek Gamer Weekly. This is a weekly show about geeky and gaming topics. My name is Chase Nims. We're here with John Kessler, Mr. Andrew Zarian from GFQ Network, also syndicating our show as well. Thank you very much, Mr. Andrew.
Thank you.
And Mr. Brian Brushwood, host of NSFW, Scam School, and other awesome content on the interwebs.
Yeah, dude, I want to give a plug to Weird Things. Every Monday night, we do Weird Things, where we talk about weird things, because we're just that clever with titles.
Weird Things.
Now, you guys talk about, like aliens and conspiracy theories and stuff like that, right? What are the topics that you guys talk about?
The way I describe it is we're three guys who don't believe in Sasquatch, but we think he's awesome.
It's like the anti-Art Bell.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a reason Art Bell's stuff, Coast to Coast AM is so popular. It's because it's like that's really interesting stuff to consider. It's just that we do it without the credulity, that idiocy of making up terms and sounding pompous like we know anything. It's like, we're idiots who don't know anything. But it's fun.
Nori's
to
one of the greatest radio hosts ever, because he'll have a guy. George Nori's the host of Coast to Coast now, but you'll have a guy call in. He's like, yeah, listen, I don't necessarily believe in aliens, but this is what my theory is. I think they're time travelers from the year 3040, where time traveling has been invented, and they're just abducting us. And Nori will just be like,
he's just like,
yeah, he'll just turn around. He's like, you know what? That makes so much sense. I may have been visited by one of these ones.
From the Kingdom of Nigh.
Yes.
That's right.
Isn't it great to be on like a long distance drive and tune in that show? Where, especially when you get it from like a magically far away place, because apparently like after dark, those stations are able to boost their signal. So it's like you'll be in St. Louis, but you'll be getting it from like Mexico.
Yeah. So like AM stations, when the sun goes down, most there's big. I don't know why we're getting into this, but that's okay. So like AM stations, like there's a few super stations, that can broadcast at 50,000 watts on the AM dial.
Well, Border Busters, they were doing where Wolfman Jack was broadcasting
Jack,
from.
The first nationwide show doing exactly that. Yeah.
So at when the sun goes down, they have to move down from 50,000 watts to 5,000 watts, because once the sun goes down, the signal travels much better. I remember being up in like the small little city up in the north part of Washington State, and I'm picking up a radio station, out of Southern California, because they forgot to drop their transmitter power. It's so cool to. I mean, I know we're. I guess we're kind of dating ourselves. I mean, John, you're from what, ham radio days, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
back in the little crystal radios.
Yeah, crystal radio. Yeah, so you're taking the wire, wrapping it around the pole. All right, let's talk about gaming topics, because I'm out of radio topics. Valve is going to be launching tomorrow, Monday, their beta of something called Big Picture. It's an interface that will allow Steam to look really good on your television in your living room.
Chase, do you think that this was the story that got perverted into everyone thinking that Valve was going to make an actual console box?
Gosh, it makes you wonder, right? Just because... Well, we heard about their whole hardware initiative when they were bringing on engineers. I don't know if you've ever met Jerry Ellsworth.
Oh, sure I have. Yeah. I mean, I met her at a Hack 5 party.
Yeah, I mean, I know her from pinball and cuz she actually lives up here in the Northwest now, and they hired her on. Valve's getting very much into hardware, so we had this assumption. I want to say a couple of months ago we were thinking maybe some sort of set-top box solution. But maybe this is it. I mean, they're obviously maybe wanting to bring and bridge the gap, because it's been attempted many times before, to get that Team Fortress 2 experience on your 70-inch TV.
But you still need to connect a device to your TV in order to do this.
Well, that part is up in the air, because from some of the things that we've been reading is you could have your computer set up, say, in your bedroom, right? And then you would get it to your TV through some sort of beaming technology.
Via Valve.
Via Valve or something, yeah.
Or like some kind of network. I mean, you could do like a dummy box, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, this is in many ways, it reminds me of the way Google's approach with Android, where it's like, don't own the hardware, own the platform. And if they can create the, if they can crack that nut of a PC gaming experience in the living room, that would be huge. And certainly a, definitely a revolution, especially, and now is the rightest time that they could possibly do it, because now look, all of the big three consoles are a decade old in their heart, right? The difference between PC gaming and console gaming is huge. And essentially what should have been a refresh cycle for consoles instead turned into like some stupid toy jamboree where they made crazy webcams. Everyone went all motion crazy instead of actually making a new version of their hardware. So I think now's the right time for Steam to step forward and become the number one dominant platform.
No, you're absolutely right, Brian. And if you look at it, 2 years ago should have been the refresh. The cycle should have been kicked into, you know, reset, because they I believe Xbox released the Kinect 2 years ago, and this year we didn't get anything. So they've really put the lifespan of the Xbox 360, I think it's like 7-8 years at this point.
Well, you know, the piece of hardware that we, you know, contemplating maybe Valve is working on is they're also working on a set of goggles that they'll wear, that the user will wear. Now we see a small picture here of a prototype.
What is that set of goggles? I want to say Ocular. That's not what, Oculus. Is that what it is? Have you seen this?
I've heard of this. We had an appointment to go see them at PAX, and we didn't get in quickly enough. They completely booked other appointments. But do you have information about it?
Well, just what I know from a friend of mine, like there's a friend of mine's who, you know, 20 years ago, back in the college days, we would, you know, we were obsessed with high-end gaming, and a friend of mine only had, only has one eye, the other one's a glass eye, so he would mock anything 3D related, and virtual reality, he'd be like, hey man, it's all 3D to me, screw this, but this guy, who only has one functioning eye, is obsessed with Oculus, not because of the stereoscopic vision or the tracking, but because of the incredible depth of field that this thing offers. Like your entire peripheral vision, it is fully immersive. It's not like you're putting on goggles and it's like you're seeing a screen 5 feet in front of you.
Yeah.
It's you put on goggles and you're in another MFing world.
It's the holodeck.
That's essentially what it sounds like. I'm way excited about seeing
but
it.
But I mean, I think if Valve put out a set-top box or some sort of console, it would be great. I think that's a really great idea. But when we're thinking of a console, we're not literally thinking of an Xbox or
not anymore.
A PlayStation for them. I'm saying for what Valve would put. We're kind of thinking that because of services like OnLive. But the thing about OnLive was that all the work was done on the server side.
But OnLive failed.
OnLive failed because I think it's a device that's come out, you know, 5 years too early.
OnLive failed because not everybody has high-speed internet access.
Exactly. And that's the biggest problem that they're going to have.
Huge.
And I think it was a little bit convoluted on how it works and what it does. And they really were not able to position themselves as a serious device. I think people saw it as, well, it might not work because it's being done on some other side. Until someone like Microsoft does it.
I think also that the problem with OnLive was that the gap between the performance gap expressed in dollars was only maybe $150, $200. I mean, you can actually get a decent gaming rig for under $200 now. So at that, it's difficult to justify an $8 a month or whatever the subscription fee was to outsource the processing of your games.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty much convinced that we will not see a successful, you know, on the cloud-based gaming console until someone like Microsoft and or Sony is able to kind of do this and it works properly.
I don't see it happening at all, and I'll tell you why. It all comes back to high-speed internet, one, where, you know, it's not everywhere, and we're not going to see it everywhere because there's no incentive for any of these big players like Comcast, Verizon, et cetera, to move into places because it's not profitable for them. They're not going to push and update the infrastructure. Secondly, there's caps on pretty much every type of online broadband service out there, exceptions to fiber, of course. But
I don't have caps.
I said exceptions to fiber, of course.
Can I just say that I finally got upgraded to my new
speeds
of 150 by 75?
That's great.
Screw you in the face, rubbing it in our face. I get dropped in the middle of a program because Time Warner's cable sucks so bad. And you're wagging your giant 150 megabyte dong in my face.
And I have 35 up and 35 down.
I'm paying a whopping $80 for that, but I do have my 50 by 50.
I am paying $30.
I am paying $30 a month for my 50 by 50.
He's pissing off the chat room.
Should I mute him? I'm ready to mute. My finger is hovering right now. It's good for you, Andrew.
Oh,
good for you.
Good for you.
Now, there is one company that is refreshing their hardware for a holiday release, and that is Nintendo. The Wii U will be out by holiday this year. Now, had a chance to mess around with it at PAX. Josh Colm and I, we played Mario, new Super Mario Brothers Wii U, and we were just, you know, our jaws were dropped because, you know, we're gamers and we love Mario, and, you know, we were just like, oh, this is beautiful, this looks great. But will it be a success, or will it be another Wii flop? I mean, obviously, you know, Wii had this huge, it trended up violently. I remember the times when you couldn't find a Wii anywhere. And then now you can find them everywhere. No one's playing their Wiis anymore. Yeah, insert your jokes here. You're not playing with your Wii anymore. Yeah, yeah. Are you buying a Wii U, Brian?
I don't think so. And now here's the thing. I will say that the way Nintendo handled the Wii was exactly perfect because you had two contenders that were very focused on the hardware and the quality of the image and the processing power. And instead, Nintendo zigged where everyone else zagged. They focused on the novelty of the interface, and it worked out very, very well. Having played with a Wii U at E3 last year, it was good. It was good. It's good hardware. It's good everything. But I don't know if it's so novel that I want to run out and set fire to $200.
And we don't even know if it's $200.
Or whatever it is, $300 we'll say, right?
I thought it was going to be $249.
On top of that, you know, on the flip side, the Wii is relegated up to the kids' room now because it looks so hideous on my high definition television now. You know, because there is the Wii U will be the first HD Wii device, right? Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. It's like they're doing the right thing. They're following up. They're focusing on novel interface instead. But I don't know that they have a hit with this the way they did with the Wii.
And, you know, and what I mean by flop is the fact that, I mean, it didn't have staying power. I mean, right now.
There was two Christmases in a row. That you couldn't get your hands on a Wii, and that was pretty good. And considering how cheap the hardware was and how much it was extraordinarily profitable. But so I'm not gonna question their business acumen.
No, not either.
But I am gonna say that that for where they are now, they certainly are the weakest of the three consoles. They had a very strong 2 years, but now I would say they're the weakest of the three.
So first off, we don't know what the price is. You know, we don't know if it's gonna be $249. Andrew's thinking it's going to be $249.
They're going to have to be $249.
They're going to have
to be. Survive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I buy all of them. So I guess I'm not a good example of the, you know, the right consumer for this, but
yeah.
I'm excited to see it because it's in HD and I'm a big Mario fan and I come from that Nintendo generation. So as long as Zelda and Mario are great games, I'm probably going to buy this thing and I'll probably love it for about a month and then I'll never use it again.
Is it going to be anything different than what we're getting from the other two consoles right now? I mean, that's the thing, right?
Yeah, well,
what are they going to do?
The titles that they have.
Well, they have their franchises. You know, they obviously have Mario, Metroid, Zelda. But what's going to be pulling in other than those Nintendo fanboys and those Nintendo gamers who love playing those first party titles? What's going to pull somebody to get a Nintendo Wii U as opposed to Microsoft console or Sony console.
Well, let's look at what made people buy the Wii in the first place. I think a lot of people that are casual gamers or not gamers at all bought it. My father-in-law, which is 60 years old and he's never played a video game in his life, has a Wii.
Yeah.
Why? Because of Wii Fit.
Yeah.
So I think they have a very interesting niche that they could capitalize on. Now, the pricing obviously will play a huge part in this.
Yeah, that's true.
I think kids and people that are not gamers buy this device because it looks fun.
Yeah, it does. So you're saying here on the show you're going to buy a Wii U, Andrew?
Yeah, I'll definitely buy one.
Yeah. After playing it at PAX, I didn't get a chance to mess around with it at E3 just because we were just too darn busy. But at PAX, got to sit down and play it. Oh, man. It's Mario, Brian. It's Mario. How can you not get this? Come on.
But you're right, though, in that what you're essentially saying is that it's all about the titles. If the titles are there, yeah, the buzz is there, then you end up buying it.
Yeah.
So the problem is that's what we haven't heard at all. We've heard a lot of explanations of the potential of what might be, of what could exist and what's possible. But we haven't heard this title definitely coming out, this experience. You got to jump in. So, yeah. When is it projected to release?
They're saying holiday, so after that's Thanksgiving, before Christmas.
Yeah. Well, here's right. A fascinating thing. Let's look at the scenario if the Wii U does not do well due to pricing or whatever it may be. What feature does Nintendo have? Because their days are really, as they release the devices, the days are getting numbered because they have these franchises that are not available on any other platform.
That's right.
What happens if the Wii U fails? Do they become like a Sega and they license everything?
That's exactly
out?
What happens. They're going to have to license out the Mario to the other consoles.
But the only way they'll ever do that is if it fails. And I mean,
it fails on a Nintendo's vocabulary, though. I don't know.
Do you ever see Nintendo being on the Xbox? Mario being on the Xbox? I don't see that happening.
Well, remember, if you would have asked me 10 years ago if I would have seen, or maybe 12 years ago, if I would have seen Sonic on the PlayStation, or if I would have seen Sonic on a Nintendo Wii U in Super Smash Brothers, I would have been like, you're effing crazy, Andrew.
Yeah, no, a lot can change very, very fast.
Yeah. And it all lies on if this device is going to sell.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sonic, you know that today is a special anniversary.
Very, very special day. History of the Dreamcast. It officially
$9.99.
It launched in the U.S. $9.99. Now, it was released in Japan in November of 98, but this was a huge push. The Dreamcast made a lot of changes. It was the first console to really have online gaming out of the box. It had a modem built right into the console, a 56K modem,
and you could get the upgrade for the network card.
That's right. And I think it came with the Phantasy Star Online, if I remember right, if my memory is correct. But this thing was awesome. Great titles: Crazy Taxi, Jet Grind Radio, Shenmue, which was one of the biggest hype titles of its era.
What? Even stuff like Blitz 2000, the fact that plays without having anyone else see what you're up to because you had your own display on your thing.
And Sonic Adventure. I mean, I remember buying Sonic Adventure and playing it on the Dreamcast. And when I would come home from work, I would just be glued to this thing because I'd be so hooked in playing. And then don't forget there's been, there's a lot of, we talk about, what killed the Dreamcast, and was it the Sony PlayStation 2? Was the lack of EA support on the console?
Well, also, we have to remember, pirating games on this thing was the easiest thing ever.
That's true. All you had to do was, at first, it was just a boot disc. And then eventually it just all became all on the same disc and didn't need a separate boot disc.
You literally had to burn an ISO.
Yeah.
All you had to do.
Yeah. Well, they did have that proprietary, GD CD-ROM.
Right, now, keep in mind, it's easy to point to the pirates on this and say, that's what killed it. But keep in mind that Sega had a disastrous decade leading up to it, where every single year they were touting the next new thing, the 32X, the
Saturn,
And at some point there was upgrade fatigue and nobody jumped on it. And that's... if you ask me, that's what killed this thing, not necessarily the any one thing like the piracy.
I will say, though, that thanks to the Dreamcast, we got a lot of revolutionary things. I mean, first off, you look at the console, first console to ever, all right, maybe not the first ever, but four dedicated controller ports in the front there. You had the VMU, you had the screen on the memory card, and now you look at what Nintendo's doing with the Wii U, much bigger screen, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, pulling from the Dreamcast as well. It was a very small footprint. I mean, it was a really, really good, solid console. 2K Sports, by the way, great sports titles. I mean, some of the best sports titles that really give EA a run for their money. There's a lot of development still happening today for the Dreamcast. I know that there's a couple of companies in Japan that still make titles for the Dreamcast.
Are you kidding me?
No, for reals. Yeah,
that is awesome.
Yeah, no, it's. And now we're starting to see these titles come out for the next-gen consoles, like on Xbox Live Arcade, obviously Crazy Taxi, Jet Set Radio we saw at Pat Pax, which is a phenomenal title. So, and also it's Jace Rossi's birthday today. So, I mean, where can you go from there? No, I mean, great stuff. You know, speaking of peripherals, we did touch on the Kinect a little bit earlier in the show. Kinect is now getting a price cut, $109.99. It's dropping from its previous price of $149.99. You're kind of making a little bit of fun about the Kinect earlier in the show, I think, Brian.
I think that the Kinect is a delightful piece of hardware. I've yet to see a must-have. I don't know what to think about the Kinect. I think it's great that they're investing efforts in novel interfaces. But when you look at the Kinect compared to what's that the little bar thing that's super precise and gives you the I can never remember what it is. It's like a PC peripheral that made the news recently, and it's like it's super precise with like eight fingers you could put on it.
Oh God!
Or a Minority Report thing. It's freaking amazing. I'm sure the chat room will have it in 5 minutes, but it's like just Kinect is not delivered in so many ways. There's a couple of adorable little games for it, but in general, you know, spending more than $100 on a Kinect, I think, is a waste.
Andrew, do you have a Kinect?
I don't have a Kinect, no.
Okay. You should get one. It's only $109.99.
You know, I'll tell you what it is. Over the last couple of years, I've really dropped out from gaming. And I'll play a couple sports games. I follow what's happening, but I can't dedicate the time to being involved in the games. But I do, you know what I do like? I do like side scrollers, and I see a lot of, you know, new games are coming out that are side scrollers. That's why I'm a big fan of Mario. But I have no interest in the Kinect.
Fair enough. Switching gears now and maybe getting a little bit of a serious topic I wanted to touch on before we have a couple more stories and move on to our picks. And that is a recent study was released. I found the story on VG247.com. And the study was conducted by Emily Matthew over on Price Charting Blog. And they found that 63% of women polled report that they have been harassed while gaming online. Being called, you know, like a bitch, slut, whore.
That low? For the, I would imagine it would be 90% of women getting harassed.
Really? Well, I don't think it's that high. I wouldn't think it's that high because, I mean, there's probably a lot of guys that are just afraid to talk to girls online.
Yeah.
I don't know. If we were talking about Xbox Live, you got a prepubescent boy, and if they think it's a girl, they're getting harassed.
The worst mistake Microsoft ever did was take away voice masking on the Xbox 360, because on the original Xbox, playing online, I would use that deep gorilla voice, and it was great. It was just awesome.
That's awesome, man. I'll tell you what, but on the flip side, the smartest thing they ever did was start the gamer reputation score. The fact that when somebody was a dick to you in a game, you could do something that would personally affect him and make him a less viable candidate for other people to play with. I thought that was really smart, and I wish that we would see that on YouTube comments.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea.
Do you guys even believe this report at all? I mean, Andrew, you said that you think it's a lot higher, so do you think this is just a BS report?
I think people's behavior online or anything in anonymity is awful. I think many people just act like total jerks out there, and it's because they're behind this wall that is the internet.
Granted, though, you know, 63% of the women thought that 35% of them were males when actually were they were girls themselves, and the girls thought they were guys.
That's really funny.
It's a really
no. I feel that there's this whole way of behaving online, and I think people kind of gotten used to just being dicks.
I only play with tend to play with my friends now. I don't. It's because of this. It's because of the 12-year-olds, the 14-year-olds.
We realize that's part of the reason that we've never seen a version of The Hunted. If you remember the original Team Fortress, you had a VIP escort mission where somebody was like El Presidente, had to get from point A to point B, and everyone else had to protect him while snipers tried to take him out. They couldn't make that version of the game for Team Fortress 2 because they couldn't crack the nut of how to deal with griefers, with people who wanted to make a game out of, you know, so you get a dick who becomes El Presidente and just doesn't cooperate and wants to ruin the game for everyone else. So that's why you now have the escort mission where it's the bomb is on a cart and you have to escort it on rails all the way up to the objective. So it's it doesn't surprise me at all. I think there's a lot of horrific crap because you number one, you have anonymity. You have a young male demographic who feels the need to lash out for whatever reason because, you know, their mom doesn't love them. But then you also have high pressure situations that causes them to react in ways that they don't run into very often in normal everyday life. So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, yeah. But man, I totally believe everything about this article and about how bad the problem is.
No, I believe it too.
I'll give you an example, Chase. I think I've told you the things that have been sent to my wife.
No.
Sent
by email or sent physically?
No. Well, physically, we had an issue where one guy was threatening to kill her, and we had to call the police, but.
Wow!
How do I say this? How family friendly can I not be?
Just be honest. Go for it.
Have a guy send us an email once a month where he would print. He would actually show a printed out picture of my wife's face, and he would ejaculate on it.
Oh man!
Oh,
and we would get this once a month from the guy. Every month, he would send a new picture.
This is like a physical male. Like you have his DNA.
Well, no. It wasn't physical male. He would actually. He would print it. He would print a picture of her, do whatever he was doing, and then take a picture of what he did and email us the picture.
Brian Monroe in our chat is, you know, he's thinking that this is more, you know, feminist propaganda. And the only thing I would say to that is, you know, I think it shouldn't be gender specific. I think this happens. It's gender neutral. I think it happens. You know, people get harassed all the time. I mean, you have, you know, immature kids who are playing, you know, Madden or playing other games. You know, girls who play online, if they're in a voice chat or whatever, they don't usually talk or chat at all. So, I don't know.
No. Listen, I'm not one of these people to scream everybody. I feel bad for. I don't feel bad for anybody, but I do feel that.
Yeah.
It's a guy's world when it comes to, you know, gaming and the internet pretty much is dominated by, you know, 14 to 18 year olds that are going and commenting on YouTube videos. So whenever they see a girl, they're going to act in ways that they normally wouldn't act. But I think the same goes for guys too. I think the same goes for anything.
Yeah.
The internet allows you to act like an animal.
Yeah. No, it's and you would hope with, you know, as we move on to these next generation consoles and gaming platforms that it would just get better. But obviously, as we're all being able to interconnect ourselves with Facebook, Twitter, you know, the harassing just continues offline, or it gets followed, or you get tracked. And, you know, people harass you on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And then pretty soon you have to be like John and just not be connected to anything. Right, John?
Correct.
That's right.
Brian harasses me all the time.
I know, dude. I need to stop. I apologize for that, by the way.
All right, you guys can hug it out later. Hey, it's football season, in case you didn't know. The NFL is now back in full swing. And what does that mean? Another edition of Madden NFL football on every console, but the PC. Thanks a lot, EA.
I thought you were going to say another disappointing year for the New York Jets.
Oh, they still have a team there.
Yeah.
Don't they share, they share a stadium, right?
This is our year.
So everybody,
this is it.
Everybody's going to yell out their team in the chat room. I just know it. But Madden NFL 13 sells 1.65 million copies in its first week, which is pretty damn good. By the way, if you buy one of these used, you'll have to buy one of those great online keys if you want to play it online. That's how they're getting away from the used gaming market. Man, who was making fun of me buying Madden? It was Joe. Joe was making fun of me buying Madden because, you know, he just doesn't understand how I could spend $60 every year on a sports video game. But I do it because I'm a sports gamer and I have a problem. But
you're hoping that maybe eventually they might get it right.
Well, this year it's okay. I beat Josh, and that's my own.
And you nailed it. The reason people get into sports gaming is not for the sports themselves. I don't think. I think it's because sports games inherently lend themselves to group experiences, like being on the couch with your buddies. And I got to be honest. If it was, you know, 10 years back and I didn't have kids or whatever, you know, it's like I would be all about sports games because it would be the easiest vehicle for me to get other friends on the couch with me to play these games. But nowadays, you know, with having kids or whatever, I think that's part of the reason I'm so attracted to PC gaming, because I virtualize my interactive experience with other people over the internet.
Oh, yeah. How many guys remember Tecmo Bowl? I do.
I do. Are you kidding me? This is the best.
John doesn't, because John and Andrew, you know what Tecmo Bowl is, right?
I don't. Tecno Ball?
Tecmo Bowl.
What?
Oh, Tecmo Bowl. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Well,
great. It was one of the greatest football games ever.
You know, there's an entire community surrounding Tecmo Bowl. TecmoBowl.org is the website, and they come out with yearly releases and updates to the original Nintendo version of the game. So you can get Tecmo Bowl Super Bowl 2013, which has all the updated rosters, includes 32 teams, an adjustable quarter length, in-game playbook editing, halftime stats, enhanced.
Dude, scroll down. There are your New York Jets right there.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Here's the screenshots. All legitimate. It's got everything. This is awesome, and I still play it. Actually, I play it on Xbox Live Arcade, but obviously it's not updated stuff. But this is great. This is awesome. We'll have a link in our show notes. TecmoBowl.org is their website, and you can get updated versions. So you can get back in touch with your youth doing 80-yard bombs down the field. Hut, 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 hut.
Brilliant.
Yes, awesome stuff. All right. It's now time for our picks of the week. These are geeky or gaming items that we like here on the show. It could be a website. It can be an item. It could be John's headphones, which they have been a pick.
Yes, you had them as a pick.
We've had them as a pick.
You had them.
But we pick something random, and we talk to you guys about it. So, Mr. Andrew Zarian, we're going to start with you. We're going to go from east to west.
Oh, wow. All right, so my pick of the week is an iPad app called Sign Now.
Sign Now.
I had to recently sign an NDA, and
They
needed me to physically sign a piece of paper, and I don't have a printer available at this moment. My copy machine is not working properly, so what do? Rather than sending it over to someone and having them print it and waiting, I looked up free signature applications, any kind of application for the iPad where I could sign a PDF. And there's a bunch of these that are about $40, $50. I saw one for $15 that was the cheapest. And then I saw Sign Now, which is totally free. And all you do is you put in your signature by default. You upload the PDF to the program, to the app, and you just move your signature to where you want it positioned, and boom. You just signed a document, and you can email directly from there.
I love this.
Or you can save it as another PDF or even a Word file.
Oh, where were you 2 months ago? Oh, my God. I love this.
And you know what? I've been looking for an app like this for a while now, because I constantly have to sign these documents, and it's so annoying to have to take the email, print out the email, then send it back to them via fax, which is useless because who's faxing at this point? It totally saves time. It's a great app, and it's so simple. I mean, it's not convoluted like some of these applications that do this. Upload the PDF, add your signature, boom, you're done.
How much does it cost?
Free.
What?
Totally free.
Bull.
Unlimited documents. And I mean, they have a paid version.
So if you want it notarized,
it's $14.99.
You pay $14.99. Now, how do they? How do they? You know, usually when you're notarizing documents, don't they have to verify ID and stuff? How do they get around that?
I don't know. I think this is a separate part to the application. I think they have the application and they have another service. Like they have a $14.99 a month pro service, which allows you to create templates, track document history.
So you just upload your documents, you sign them, and then you can...
You don't even upload them. What you do is you got to have them on the iPad. You open up a PDF and you add the signature. You save it and you email it to yourself or whoever.
See, I'm undergoing right now. Refining a house, by the way, is terrible, especially now.
It's smart to do.
It's very smart. But it's a lot of paperwork, especially when rates change and they made a mistake and then they have to send you over 40 pages of documents and then you have to sign them all. I have a freaking old fax machine because I refuse to pay for some of these online faxing services. So I actually hook it up to my VoIP line, which I've already killed now, so I have to figure out a new method. This is my new method. I love this.
It's so awesome. Wow. I mean, it's like having a fax and a printer in one.
Now, I love
and
you,
and the signature, by the way. I'll tell you something. When I signed it, I have one of those. I have a stylus, like a pen.
Oh, so it's a nice signature.
Yeah. I don't know if it's behind me. I was going to grab it. But I have like a stylus for the iPad, and you could actually, in the application, you could say you can modify the thickness of the pen. Oh. So you could actually have it thinner if it's, you know, if you don't like the way it came out. But when I signed it, it looks absolutely perfect on the signature pad.
This is just gorgeous. So the website, folks, for you guys, if you want to check this out, and I'm bookmarking this, I'm adding this into my bookmarks, and I'm going to get this right now. No credit card is required. Signnow.com is the website. That is an awesome pick, Andrew. I love you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. You just saved my life.
Thank you.
He was literally about to die without the signature.
Yeah, he was dying any minute now. I mean, at 11 p.m. Eastern, he was going to just drop dead live on the stream, but now we've extended his life by a couple
months. That's right. Now we're going to go from 11 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern.
I see. We're counting down. All right. Look, I got to give some love to our friends over at Valve for their Man vs. Machine co-op update for Team Fortress 2. This is amazing. Team Fortress 2 is one of these amazing evergreen games where it's like I keep coming back to it. The play balance is so perfect. The character of the game is amazing. And every so often they do something like this. Valve should be making movies and indeed are making movies if you know about their
The Movie Maker
or space western that they're doing coming up. But they've got the Man vs. Machine update. If you check it out at manversusmachine.com, just Google Man versus Machine. But the video sketches out the co-op play. It's five players total, maybe you and five other people, so six people total, take on a never-ending army of, or virtually never-ending army, of robot versions of all the main characters of Team Fortress. And it is hard as balls, man. This thing, they're not messing around. They've got the free version to play for scrimmage is totally free. Or you could buy these 99-cent tickets where you are guaranteed an awesome drop if you make it through all, four different iterations. I haven't done it yet, but it's amazing. It's a lot of fun. It forces you to think about strategy in a way you've never thought about before. And each round, you build up money that you get to spend on upgrades to allow your character to do things it's never been possible to do before.
So we're showing this is the trailer from Valve of it. And as you can see, red and blue joining forces for this machine.
All the notes, man. They're just so good at these little vignettes because they set you up thinking that you're about to see, you know, red attack blue, but instead they team up and then you get this moment where they're, you know, they don't know, you don't know what the threat is, but then it turns out to be these machines that are like clumsy steam powered versions of themselves. It's amazing, dude.
I'm gonna keep it here for just a moment. We'll finish off this trailer. This looks awesome.
It really is, and the game plays It plays just like it looks, man. It's essentially, to be honest.
Oh my God! Look at the real robots. That's right? Awesome.
So the this game is so good that I was crazy about Orcs Must Die 2, but then this totally neutered me. I was just like, well, I'm just gonna play this instead.
Oh,
Chase,
wow.
Wasn't my nephew playing this?
Was he?
At the LAN the other at your place. I know he was there doing waves of guys coming in and, as robots. So yeah, my nephew was playing this.
This looks
it looked
great.
Pretty good.
This looks awesome.
It's so Valve, right?
Because it is.
It's totally free and amazing, and then they figure out a way on the back end to make some bucks on it.
Oh, of course. That's the way of doing it, right? You know, it's kind of like the whole frog in the hot water. You know, you're slowly. It's like, okay, I'll buy it. This is awesome. No, this is great. I can't wait to check that out. It's Team Fortress Man versus Machine. That's man with two N's.
Yeah, John. Like I said, my nephew was playing it the other weekend.
Very cool. And by the way, Mr. John Kessel, you're up. What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is something that I came across on Crunchyroll, which I know the guys and some of the guys in IRC there were pretty happy about.
Yeah.
A anime, and it started off, they do have a book series on it.
Okay.
So it's not just the anime. I was trying to figure out, find the books, but I have a feeling that I probably would not be able to read them.
yeah. But what is it?
It is called Sword Art Online.
Sword Art Online. And I've been watching this with you
a little bit
on Crunchyroll.
Yep.
And this is really good. Well, I like it.
Yeah. You know, you're streaming on Crunchyroll. Crunchyroll. You know, it's 1080p. So it's, it's a current, nice high def.
Yep, looks great.
Series.
And we're watching it through the PS3.
PS3 on that. I'm watching it straight through their website at home on my home theater PC, and I've watched some of it on my Nexus. Gist of the movie is go on.
Oh, I was going to say, so they're users, playing in a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, and they're wearing this headgear. So that immerses them into this virtual reality experience called Sword Art Online. And the person who created this basically prevents you from taking off the headgear, from quitting out of the game. And the only way that you're ever going to get back into the real world and be able to live your real life again is by finishing the game, getting to level 100. And there's a story along the way about this player who was a beta player who's going through the game. It's really fun. My wife will not watch it because there's not a lot of sexual content. I'm kidding.
No,
but it's good. It's really good.
It's definitely. It's not a. There's not much fan service in it. It's not. That's not what this thing's about. It's got a pretty good. Pretty solid storyline to it.
Yeah. So you can get this on Crunchyroll. It's called Sword Art Online, and it's subtitled. But in the traditional language, but subtitled, and it's a good one. You have to start at episode one, so you can start learning the backstory on this. I think it's up to how many episodes now?
Episode 10 just came out this weekend.
Okay.
So of course I watched it last night.
Very good. Sword Art Online. Get it on a Crunchyroll. My pick of the week this week is a website that a lot of you guys probably already know about. It's one that I've been really hooked on lately, just because of the fact I'm a tinkerer, I'm a geek, I like making my own things, and I'm getting ready to kind of remodel the space that I do our shows in. And I've been thinking and looking at different ideas of manufacturing and creating different items. And the website that I go to, that I've been going to a lot, is a site called Instructables.com. And this site is just really, really cool. It will help you create different kinds of items, and it's from all terms of all aspects of the spectrum. For example, if let's say you're a pregnant mom and you're looking for the ultimate pregnant mom costume, they show you how to create a costume that looks like, your baby hands are coming out of your stomach, and as you can see there, it looks pretty, realistic-ish, I guess. But there you go. I mean, this site walks you through, you might like this, Mr. Brian, magic tricks.
Go on.
Yes. So, for example, they will show you how to make a homemade stripper deck.
Absolutely. This is one of the best fake decks that you could possibly make. And the only problem is most people are like, I don't want to spend $12 on a fake thing. If you can make it at home, though, you're good.
Yeah. So obviously, this site has everything when it comes to how to, and really it's about showing you how to do it. Here's an example, a wireless mic to guitar hack. So, for example, let me click on that. It'll show you how to take a wireless mic and able to basically create an input device for your guitar. So it's got all these different modifications that you can make. Do-it-yourself microphone hack for Rock Band. So if you want to use an old classic, looks like that's a Shure. God, what kind of Shure microphone is that? But you want to use it for Rock Band. You mod it with a Karaoke Revolution USB microphone from Logitech. I mean, they got all these weird, neat, hybrid mashing projects and stuff, and I've just been fascinated. And right when I'm done reading about one, I go on to the next one. It's a really cool website. I know they probably get a lot of traffic from their diehard people out there, but I want to kind of introduce it to you guys in case you guys didn't know about it. Website is called Instructables.com. Lots of great projects on that website. John, have you ever heard of Instructables? Have you ever been there?
No.
Thanks for killing.
Yeah. Sorry.
The flow. You're supposed to say
it all down.
Yeah.
Also, there's a someone in chat room pointed out a great website called hackandmod.com.
Todd Conkrig, thank you for that. Was a short SM55. I was waiting for for MC Phillips to chime in, but that works. Very good. We want to remind everybody that we do the show every Sunday evening. We try to go live around 6 p.m. Pacific time over there at live.geekgamer.tv, where we have a great time doing this show. We have a couple shows that we do every week. We have Minecraft Me, which is a show entirely about Minecraft, where we show you through and help you learn how to play the awesome game of Minecraft. And also this show, Geek Gamer Weekly. And we also have specials and special content they put out, like the Penny Arcade Expo. Still content coming. I'm an edit facility of one. So as soon as I get more content, I put it out there online for you guys to check out. That's all at geekgamer.tv. I want to say a big, big thank you, first off, to Mr. Andrew Zirin, guys from queens.com, gfqnetwork.com, gfqlive.tv, and any other URLs pointing to that site. Andrew?
No, that's about it.
Okay, very good. You can also follow him on Twitter at Andrew Zarian as he sends his colors through a rainbow effect. That is just nice, Andrew. That's so soothing back there.
It is soothing.
It is very nice. And
I just get loaded and I just stare at the wall for the next, couple hours.
That's what I would
do. Plan on doing to end my night.
Also want to say a big thank you to this gentleman right here, Mr. Brian Brushwood.
How about that? Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, that looks great, man. That is awesome. And Brian, I appreciate you staying up late. Obviously, you have a lot of things going on. We can follow you on Twitter at Schwood, S-H-W-O-O-D, or Schwood.com. What's the latest and greatest things that are happening in the world of Brian right now?
Well, of course, we just finished our giant hoax against 50 Shades of Grey, where we wrote an erotic fiction novel that spent 3 weeks at the top of the iTunes store. Right now, I'm getting ready. I'm going to be that a-hole who can't tell you what he's up to because I'm working on some TV stuff right now.
Cool.
As soon as we're done, I've got to put some finishing touches on this pitch that we're putting out. But it's amazing, man. I'm way excited about it.
Now, we can follow you on Twitter, but do you follow back?
No.
Brian follows me.
Because
that's called stalking.
Like, I already can't keep up with all the people coming in on my Twitter feed. But I'll tell you what though, I do respond to every single one of my at replies. So just send me messages directly.
And Brian is really good at that. I've probably sent him about 150 at replies, and he finally got back to me. and in all seriousness, Brian, it's been great having you on, and hopefully we can get you back on in the future, man.
Absolutely, man. This is a lot of fun.
No, I appreciate it. Mr. John? High pitch. Yeah. John Kessler, our EVE Online specialist. Have you been playing a lot of EVE lately, John?
Yesterday, yes.
Okay.
Most of the day.
Did you leave the house?
Yesterday, no.
John, which was on record at one time, Brian, saying that he would never pay a monthly fee for any video game, now plays EVE Online.
I'll tell you what, EVE Online terrifies me. I think it's great because it's totally free, and it's like it actually is a game that allows for scams and cons as part of the game and real life wars and stuff. But I'm kind of terrified of it because I think it would consume my life. How do you maintain your own existence?
Carefully. we were laughing because we had, was it 2 weekends ago?
Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks.
When I had my PC here at the LAN party, I played a little bit here. I took my computer home, put it in the computer room. I hadn't touched it until this last Friday night. Wow. I actually had people texting me, are you okay?
Are you coming back?
Are you coming back? And I was like, I've just actually just been going home, vegging on the couch after work and watching stuff on Crunchyroll. So, I mean, you do have to take a break every now and then.
Yeah.
But I don't play anything else. You know, it's either I'm watching stuff in the living room, it's like I got to put my stereo system to work.
Yeah,
every now
that's
and
true. So absolutely.
Hey, Chase, can I get a quick plug in? I forgot something.
Plug.
I'm going to get yelled at by Spencer. I want to mention the IAIB.
The International Association of Internet Broadcasters?
Yes, sir.
What is that?
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? The IAB is the most important voice for broadcasters like you and me. Are you kidding?
I was playing dumb.
Little guys like us don't have an NBC to speak in our behalf, and so we have to band together. And that's what's important about communities like the IAAB. I can't even say it.
The spiel.
No. And actually, you know, we as you guys can see, if it's not underneath the Twitch TV logo. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm pointing the wrong corner. Up in this corner, we proudly display the IAIB logo, and we also display it on our website because, you know, we are true believers in an open community involvement and having a voice for all these independent internet broadcasters to come together and really have a place in a forum. And, you know, Spence and Andrew have been nothing but great shepherds in that regard. And so
scary is that it's degenerates like me leading the way.
Drinking your nondescript beer.
It's a GFQ Weiser.
GFQ Weiser.
Yeah, we're classy in Queens. We drink Budweiser.
Yes.
High-end beer for us. No, the IIB, iBroadcastNetwork.org. If you're an up-and-coming internet broadcaster, if you've been doing this for a while, And you want to hang out with other internet broadcasters, talk to them, see what they're up to, cross promote, whatever. iBroadcastNetwork.org is the website. We also have an unbelievable forum. I know Chase is active.
I'm getting more active.
I know Brian is a featured IIB broadcaster on.
Yeah, I'm still not a pro broadcaster for some odd reason.
I don't know
what that means.
I don't know. You know what it is? We haven't issued the pro broadcasters yet. We've only pro'd people that I know that have been on the radio.
Oh, on the radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how I've done it. But we're putting out a criteria, actually. That's one of the most asked questions. We're putting out a criteria.
So if I was a call-in on a radio show, does that count?
No.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Or if you've been on TV. I think, let me see, is Brian featured? I'm curious.
We were talking about it. I hadn't seen it. I actually, when
oh,
you
there
said,
he is. Yeah, go to if you go to members, you'll see Brian right there.
Go to members. Okay. So we have Kirk, Spencer, Andrew, Mike, some guy named Brian, and Tom.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And Brian is a pro broadcaster.
Let's click on his profile.
What? There's a biography and everything.
Fires coming out of his ears.
Since 2000, Brian Brushwood has been touring nationally and internationally with his Bizarre Magic Show, a thrill ride mashup of dangerous stunts, fire-eating, mind-reading,
whoever wrote this is clearly a genius.
Did you pull this directly from his website, I wonder?
No, I think your assistant sent it to me.
Yeah, actually, no, I did. I had who I believe pulled that from the website. So eventually the answer is yes.
Yes. It all comes from the website. But people like Brian that make me credible.
That's true. And now, thanks to Mr. Brian, we've come full circle because now I'm on the map thanks to Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Right on, man.
You can follow me on Twitter if you guys want to. And I do occasionally follow back at Nunes, Nunes, on Twitter. And also, you can follow the network on Twitter as well, at Geek Gamer TV. We're also on Facebook, Google Plus, YouTube. We're everywhere. So
Chase, listen, you need to make a new show that's all about what's the latest and greatest, and you need to call it The Newness with Newness.
The Newness with Newness.
See?
I like the sound of that. We've actually named an episode of Tech News Weekly, What's the Newness All About? I think it. What was the name of the episode?
Can I just say people are coming up with, there's no specific reason why Leo is not on that list right now. They just haven't signed up. People are thinking, you know, crazy conspiracies on why Leo's not there.
We'll just have to find out. Tune in next time.
Maybe there is something deep there. Chase, I want to thank you for having me today.
Oh, no. This has been an awesome show. I apologize. It's a little long for some people. Longer than what we're used to. But no, that's okay. That's all right. That's the best part about doing internet broadcasting. You can just hit pause and come back to it later.
Listen, I'm used to doing your show till like 1 o'clock in the morning.
That's
so
true. Yeah. Well, that's why we started early now for all you peeps on the East Coast.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think it's doing great.
Yeah. No, it's a great time as always. And Joseph Falby couldn't be here this week. That's right. That's the hat and beard guy, because he was at a LAN party this weekend in Portland, Oregon. And so he's a staff member of that LAN party group, and we'll hopefully have Joe back next week. But we always have John here holding down the fort in the chat room.
See.
Thanks to you guys watching us live this evening. I know a lot of you guys are checking us out for the very first time, and I do appreciate it. We do this every Sunday, like I said, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 East. At live.geekgamer.tv. For Mr. John Kessler, Andrew Zirian, Brian Brushwood, my name is Chase Nunes. Until we all talk again, we are all silent. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
Take care, brush your hair.
Bob Saget.
I like fudge.
I like fudge.
I like fudge.